Connie Kaplan, and welcome to the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we talk about spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode 7, The Principle of Regeneration. Today, you'll hear about my first sunburn. You'll receive another knitting assignment, this time even more mathematical than the first. You'll remember Kermit's mantra, "It's not easy being green." You'll hear feedback that brought me to tears. And as always, a surprise ending. Let's talk about regeneration. You know, it is encoded in our life force that we participate with the development of our potential. We participate with the seed that is within to unfold our greatest possibilities. Meister Eckhart, the Christian mystic, tells us that the seed of God is in every human being. That like the acorn, which cannot ultimately become anything other than an oak tree, we cannot ultimately become anything other than God. The programming of the seed that drives us ever toward manifesting that core potential is always there from the moment we're born. It is our invisible garment. It may take millions of years, but each of us never stops moving toward that potential, toward that embedded goal. Regeneration is the energetic drive that allows information to flow between cells, driving us toward our divinity, toward our destiny of realizing our own potential. This energetic drive extends through all life forms, and all life forms can assist each other in the process of enlightenment. In fact, that's what the Bodhisattva vow is about in the Buddhist tradition. One takes a vow to continue to reincarnate until all life forms have reached enlightenment, or in other words, reached their own divine potential. Regeneration is anchored in the out there world, in the plant kingdom. Plant cells are similar enough to human cells that the regenerative flow that exists in the plant kingdom can restore and regenerate the human. It can establish itself and transfer itself from plant to human without interference. I think we all know that all of our drugs and all of our medications are really plant-based. I want to share a story with you, which this is the first time I ever remember really getting that plants are regenerative for me. I was probably a junior or senior in high school, and I had been invited by a girlfriend to go with her and her family on their summer vacation, which was to a cabin on a lake in Central Texas. We went, and the first day that we were there, we went out on their boat to ski. Now, in those days, we didn't really know so much about sunscreen. In fact, we kind of did the opposite. We did things like put baby oil on our bodies or Crisco or something so that we would get a great suntan. Great suntan was a sign of, I don't know, importance or popularity or wealth or something. I don't know. But we needed a great suntan. So I went out ready to ski, and I think I put baby oil all over my body. And I spent the day on the lake in the boat skiing and enjoying myself and having a great time. Well, I think you know the end of this story. The sunburn was unbelievable. By the next morning, I was in so much pain I could hardly walk. My skin was so tight that I couldn't bend my knees. I was especially burned on my shoulders and on my upper legs. And it was just, I'm sure you've had a sunburn. You know how that is. So I walked into the room, waddled kind of stiff-leggedly into the room where my friend's mother and some of her friends were playing bridge. And one of her friends looked up at me and said, "Oh, honey, you've got to have some aloe." Well, I didn't know what aloe was, but she said, "Come on, follow me home." So they were staying in the cabin, you know, two or three cabins down. It was a very painful walk down there. But she had this plant, you know, this cactus plant, and she whacked off a leaf of this cactus plant and got the juice out of it and put it on my shoulders and my legs, and there was immediate relief. It was immediate. It was a miracle. To me, I had never experienced anything like that. Being touched by the juice of a plant, and suddenly my skin, the pain was gone. It was just, it was amazing. It was my first experience of what I considered to be a miracle. I didn't peel. I didn't, you know, I didn't die. I wasn't in pain. I didn't go out skiing that next day, but the pain was relieved immediately by a plant. Now, I suppose that's not so unusual in this particular day because we're living in a more green world. But at that particular time, the plants were just plants. You know, they weren't respected as beings. But I mean, I worshipped that aloe vera plant. A few years later, I had some other similar experiences. I had strep throat at one point, and I was really upset about having to take an antibiotic. And someone told me that there was a homeopathic that would knock out strep in a day. And I thought, yeah, right. And I went to the homeopathic store and they gave me a pill to let it dissolve under my tongue. And within hours, I was completely relieved. And actually, truly, within 24 hours, the strep was gone. I had a second test. And they agreed at the doctor's office that I didn't have to have the antibiotic because the strep was gone. When homeopathics work, they really work. When they don't work, they're just sugar pills that you dissolve under your tongue. But when there is this resonance between the plant kingdom and the human body, the power to heal, the power, the possibility to regenerate is amazing because the cells of the plant and the cells of the human body share information directly across species boundaries, across genus boundaries, across any kind of physical boundaries that exist there. I just think it's miraculous. Every one of us, every human being, every animal being, every living force being lives within this drive to refresh, to renew, to regenerate. Every cell wants to regenerate. Every cell, when it exhausts itself, wants not to die, but to regenerate. It's essential to our health. It's essential to our happiness. It's essential to life. We all are encoded with this desire to regenerate. Now, what I find interesting is what does actually regenerate people, other than the right medications or the right food or the right relationship to the plant kingdom in whatever way. I find it interesting to look at what kinds of activities regenerate people. You know, on the two ends of the pole, there are people that we call extroverts and there are people that we call introverts. Extroverts are people who are regenerated by being with other people. They are energized by being in the presence of energy. Of the energy of other people. Introverts are the people who regenerate by being alone, by having solitude, by closing in, by going to the well, by going to the cave. And I think it's very interesting to watch, you know, all the various gradations between introvert and extrovert, and who tends to be what, and who tends to marry what, and who tends to give birth to what. For example, I am an introvert. There is no question about it. I am, let's say introvert is to the left of center and extrovert is to the right of center. I am as far to the left of center as you can get without falling off. I prefer solitude over just about anything. I remember when I was in college, I used to go out on dates with guys, and my thought as I walked out the door on a first date with somebody was, all right, guy, this better be good because I could be in my room taking a nap. It better be better than me being alone taking a nap. And that's a pretty high bar for me. Solitude is very important for me. I married an extrovert. My husband loves being with people. He loves parties. He often makes lunch plans. He will go out to lunch, meet somebody for lunch 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week. And he will have initiated all of those engagements. He calls people and says, let's meet. And he chats forever. And he loves a party. And he loves to, he works a room. He loves to work a room. And he loves ball games. He loves football games and basketball games and baseball games. Wherever he can go to be with people and to communicate with people and to engage with people. He just loves it. He has so much trouble understanding the whole email world because he would rather talk on the phone to people. He has trouble understanding the Twitters and the Facebooks and those kind of networking technologies. He thinks when you network, you pick up the phone and call people and meet them and you know, actually face-to-face engage with them. And I certainly can't argue with that. I, on the other hand, however, really love the Twitters and the Facebooks and the technologies, because I can sit in my room in my jammies all snuggled up in my bed and communicate with people without needing to get up and go out and be in the presence of energy. And actually, to me, there is nothing worse than the idea of going to a basketball game. It's being in a big old room with a lot of big old loud people. Oh my gosh. To me, it's torture. Well, any loud room is torture. I remember once a group of my girlfriends were taking me out to a really elegant restaurant for dinner on my birthday. We walked in, we sat down, we ordered drinks, and I burst into tears because it was so loud. I thought, to sit here for 2 hours is going to be the worst possible torture I can imagine. And I got up and ran out of the restaurant, and I was bawling on the street corner because I didn't want to be at my own party. And they were very sweet. They paid for the drinks. We ordered pizza or something and went over to somebody else's house. And I stopped by my house on the way and put on my jammies. So it's interesting looking at how people regenerate. But what's even more interesting is knowing that everyone has that need. Everyone has that desire. Whether you have regeneration in your chart or not, which I do a couple of times, you are driven to rest, to recreate, to regenerate. Now it's time to talk about knitting, and you know how I love to talk about knitting. Now, as I've told you before, knitting is a mathematical process. However, today I'm going to talk to you about a very specific kind of mathematical process. There is this thing called the Mobius strip. Mobius strip can be made by taking a long piece of paper, a strip of paper, giving it a half twist and joining the two ends. If you do that, you glue those two ends together somehow, you have this continuous loop. You can put a pencil down and you can keep pulling that loop and keep pulling that loop and keep pulling that loop, and eventually you will come back to your original line, the original point where this line started. A Mobius strip is a surface with only one side and only one boundary. It sounds like it's an impossible thing to do, but it can be done. A Mobius strip is basically an infinity figure, a figure eight. Even though it's a two-dimensional object, it has only one side. When I looked it up in Wikipedia, it said a Mobius strip is a surface with only one side and only one boundary component. The Mobius strip has the mathematical property of being non-orientable. In other words, there's no top, there's no bottom, there's no beginning, there's no end. It has no orientation. That, to me, is a very interesting metaphor for regeneration. We exhaust ourselves and then we renew ourselves. We extend and then we loop back in on ourselves. This figure eight, this never-ending flow of energy between the cells of our body, never-ending flow of information between the cells of our body or between our cells and the cells of the plant kingdom. The Mobius strip then is a great metaphor for this principle of regeneration. It has no beginning. It has no end. We continue to exhaust ourselves and regenerate ourselves, to give ourselves away and then take ourselves back, to extend our energy and then bring it back, to exhale and then to inhale. These are all ways to describe what regeneration is, really. It is the ability to renew. So in knitting, when you knit a Möbius scarf or a shawl, it is a scarf that has no beginning and has no end, but it has interesting dimension. It has a twist in it. It can be worn down on the shoulders as a shawl. It can be worn up on the neck as a scarf. It continually reinvents itself depending on how large you make it and where you put the fold on your body. It can be worn in multiple ways, and it continually recreates itself, reinvents itself, folds back in on itself. It looks good and is most puzzling when you choose a stitch pattern that is totally reversible. In other words, a stitch pattern that looks the same on both sides, like a garter stitch. But if you do a pattern that has a right side and a wrong side, then you're constantly looking at either the right side or the wrong side. And for those of us who are always attracted to the wrong side, it creates an interesting dynamic, an interesting visual dynamic, and it gives the scarf or the shawl even more dimension. It's knitted on round needles in the round, so even the knitting itself never stops. It's not like you knit a long strip. I mean, you could knit a long strip and give it a fold and sew both ends together, but it's even more interesting when you knit it in the round, because you knit around and around and around and around, and you realize that you actually started in the middle, and you knit one round and that's a round on top, and then you knit another round and that's a round on bottom, but you never stop. There's no start and stop other than where you placed a marker, just to let yourself know that you have begun a new round, just to let yourself know that that's the place where you would start binding off at the end. So I just want to suggest to you that you knit a Möbius strip for yourself. You can do a very small one that just barely fits over your neck and is kind of like a little neck warmer. It won't take you but an evening to do it. But as you knit this Möbius strip, you see how you knit one row above the center and one row below the center and one row above the center and one row below the center. It's a strip of knitting that is constantly in the process of regeneration. Now, this portion, we talk about the politics of ethical behavior. Perhaps for the first time, the principle of regeneration, if that is your ethical principle, actually does become political. Because if regeneration influences your ethical decisions, you are by definition a part of the green movement. You incorporate such questions as, what would this decision do to the environment? What would this decision do for other beings, plants, animals, minerals? What would this decision mean for the 7 generations into the future? What would this decision mean for Earth, for my mother? I'll tell you a quick story that relates to me and regeneration. In the early 1990s, we decided to add a second story to our house. It was cheaper to do that than to sell the house and buy the one next door, because real estate prices had done what they had done since we had bought the house 10 years earlier. So we moved out and we put a second story on the house. And while the builders were in the process of building, they managed to kill every plant in the garden. So when we moved back in and it was time to re-landscape, we were in the middle of a drought in Santa Monica, California, and in fact, we were in water rationing, which I don't think has happened since then. And so I wasn't allowed to water my yard. So there was no way I could plant a grass yard. So I called a friend of mine who is a landscape designer, and she was brilliant, and she was creative, and she was courageous, and she was a little bit wild. And she said, let's plant a prairie. Now, I had had a dream about planting a prairie, too, which you may have read about in one of my books, but we got into this whole idea of planting native plants, planting drought-resistant plants and plants that were native to the hills of Santa Monica. So we went trudging around in the hills of Santa Monica to take pictures and see what was native. And we went out to John Greeley's native grass nursery out in Pomona, and we bought a lot of native plants and planted them and divided them and planted more and designed this prairie in my yard. Well, it was quite a trip doing this. No one in this neighborhood had done this. Everyone was still pretending that we were in England, and they were planting just greedily thirsty plants all over their front yards. We had to get permission from the city to plant the native plants in the walkway, the area between the sidewalk and the street. And we had to argue with them. It took us forever to get permits to do that. But because we were in water rationing, and because they were kind of curious about the difference it would make to the amount of water that I was going to use, they finally gave me permission to do it. But it was a battle with City Hall, let me tell you. So anyway, we planted this garden, and over a period of years, it became quite beautiful and quite wild and quite amazing. I was in a bunch of garden shows and a bunch of garden magazines, and every once in a while I would look out my kitchen window and I would see a whole group of people out there taking notes and pictures, and I would walk out and it would be some horticulture class from Santa Monica College or from UCLA, and they just chose to study my garden. Lots of times I would go outside and people would just be sitting in the garden because I had various little places to sit, little outdoor rooms, and they just felt invited as if it were some sort of horticultural museum. So I felt really good about this garden, and often I would meet people and they'd say, oh, you live at that house, you know, oh, I've changed my direction of going to work so that I can drive by that house because I love that garden. I love to look at that garden. And then it did start a trend in the city of Santa Monica. After my garden filled in and people began to see how beautiful a native plant garden could be, various builders kind of adopted that idea, and I started noticing that houses that were being built were then being landscaped in a very similar way using the similar plants. So anyway, I realized at a certain point, I kept getting emails and visitations from people, and especially when I was in open house garden shows and whatever, people would come by, and I realized that the decision to create that garden was probably one of the most important decisions of my life. It affected many more people than I realized. It set a trend in Santa Monica. It changed the way people looked at being green. And I realized that I had really done a service. It was sort of like a community service to have planted that garden. Now, I have to say, since then, we sold that house 2 years ago, and I have watched over the past 2 years the builders who have been reconstructing the house for the new owners, and the plants have been killed. The garden has been completely decimated. The new owners have planted thirsty grass, and it's a very, very different place now. It's not there anymore. It's only there in my memory, and the memory of the many, many people who appreciated it when it was there. And I think that's an interesting story, only because that is something about the politics of ethical behavior. Politics move slowly. Political movements move slowly. They take two steps forward and then they take a step back. I know that I'd set a trend in Santa Monica. I know that I changed some minds. I know that I changed the direction of the way planting personal gardens was going to go in that city. And it's gone. Now it's gone. That garden doesn't live anymore. Those plants have been killed. It's an interesting paradox for me, and one that I struggle with. But I do want to share with you that I planted many, many plants in that garden that were regenerative in nature. I planted lots of aloe in that garden. I planted lots of sage in that garden. I even planted a couple of plants that could have been turned into hallucinogenic recreational cocktails. I never did that, but I had the recipes. Just want you to know.
So what do I take from that whole experience? I have to go with Kermit the Frog. It's not easy being green.
So I've asked for your feedback and your questions. I think when I first asked for your feedback, I thought I was going to get criticism. I thought I was going to get questions. I thought I was going to be challenged. But instead, I have been so blessed by such sweet things that many of you have said. So with their permission, I want to read you a couple of pieces of feedback that I've gotten over the last couple of weeks. The first one is about the podcast on the principle of beauty. It's from Cammie. Ah, what a beautiful podcast, Connie. I'm enjoying these podcasts so much. Thank you for speaking words of beauty. The gift of beauty is one that can long outlive the giver. I think of my mother in this way. She was a musician, a pianist, and a great lover of beauty in all its infinite forms. She was one of those larger-than-life people who enthusiastically embraced the potential for beauty in everything and everyone she loved, to the point that it often overwhelmed those of us who lived with her. I remember coming home for Christmas break and finding both the beds in my room piled to the ceiling with fabric she had purchased, meant to be turned into beautiful clothes made by her dressmaker. When she died, she had over 600 pairs of shoes, many hand-dyed to match these clothes. And this is just one example out of many. The potential of beauty being expressed was so compelling to her that she could not help but engage in its manifestation. So yes, maybe she was a bit obsessive about bringing beauty into being. And yes, maybe this obsessiveness caused a few problems in relationships. In fact, I wasn't on the greatest of terms with her when she died. It wasn't until I had been engaged in this principle study for 4 or 5 years that it occurred to me to find out my mom's principles. Have you guessed it? She had beauty 5 times. And now, after all these years, it is only her love of beauty that remains with me. All that other stuff has faded away. She left me a great appreciation of music, the piano, color, fabric, food, and the ideal of looking for beauty in everyone and everything. So now when I find myself in the yarn store musing over this color or that, I think of her and what she would have thought about her non-crafty daughter learning to knit in her 50s, knitting beautiful things and giving them away, loving her beautiful ever-growing stash of yarn piling up in the closet. And I smile. Thanks, Mom, for teaching me beauty. The second letter is from Annette. Connie, this is beautiful. You are so, so good at this. I figured something out. My job here is to walk my talk, often a challenge. My mind often goes some of the places yours does, and I certainly resonate with and recognize truth when I hear it. But I figured that while I can go out and find myself, and frequently do, my job is more to move it physically through humanity, if that makes any sense. So I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your going out there and roping those stars, because I find it tremendously inspiring, and I end up with a wheelbarrow full of intention and clarity, stuff to spread on the planet after I hear your podcasts. We, all of us, are a community, an organism. Annette, ascendant in extension. Oh, and I might actually knit those gloves. Thanks to Cammie and Annette for those beautiful words, and thanks to you all who have responded to me and given me feedback and given me this kind of encouragement. I am glad you're enjoying the podcast, as am I. As always, thanks to Kevin Brennan for the music. Be sure to purchase all of his music at his website, www.fboo.com. And please come to the Turtle Dreamers website, turtledreamers.com. The link for the Regeneration newsletter will be in the program notes for this podcast. While you're at Turtle Dreamers, be sure and check out the free dream space and see what all the dreamers around the world are sharing with each other and how we're dreaming the new dream into being. Be sure and contribute your own dreams and your own thoughts. And now for our surprise ending. You know, I talked earlier about my being an introvert and that to regenerate, I need to be alone and not worry about what anyone else thinks about me or what anyone else thinks about anything else. Well, when I was looking for today's closing song, I found a wonderful future-building band called The Switch. Look them up. Listen to the lead singer, Kay Altair. I hope I pronounced her name right. It's spelled K-A-I, okay? Altair, A-L-T-A-I-R, Kay Altair. Listen to her speak about how she regenerates. These words sound so familiar.
Daylight breaks and I'm awake. I'm not getting out of bed. I like to spend the morning hours with the thoughts inside my head. And you can say that it's not reality, but I think I'll spend the day far from this city full of people and the little games they play. If the world doesn't mention me, pages of its history pass.
Take it as a sign.
Until next time, sweet dreams.